This is the 20th season of Bass Talk Live. BTL is presented by Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFTCO, Pro Guide Batteries, Spro, Gamakatsu, The Bass Tank, Denali Rods, Beatdown Outdoors, and Sunline.
BTL coming at you.
Good morning and welcome to another exciting edition of BTL Bass Talk Live, where we are going to talk about bass fishing, just like a straight derby show today. We talked about the St. Jude Bass Classic that went down this past weekend. Thank you for all the support of that. We've talked about a lot of stuff that's been going on in the industry, but I was really excited. I wasn't excited to see how the weather went down at stage four of the BPT last week on Lake Eufaula, but as a result of how the weather went down, it turned into a fishing tournament. Like, that's fishing with an N and the little, what is that, apostrophe or something after. It was just going out, figuring out how things were going to transpire on a fishery that came up 4 feet. It's still almost 4 feet high now and it's dropping. There's a Toyota series, I believe, coming up on Eufaula that'll be very interesting. But as is often the case, I think, like in the past, like let's say the past like decade up until the last 2 years, like rapidly changing conditions on a lake that a lot of guys don't have a ton of experience with, that would tend to favor the hometown guys. And I don't know if I call him a hometown guy for Lake Eufaula, but he is an angler who has won a lot in Oklahoma, very familiar with it. And then he went out and he did a number of things, made a lot of good calls, and then just smoked a 5-pounder on a frog to seal the deal. We're actually going to play that clip for the stage four winner who is joining us. And that is the one and only Zach Burge. Zach, thanks for jumping on BTL.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
I did not realize that you had 11 top 10s on the BPT without getting a victory. That's a lot of close calls, because I think a lot of people don't realize you start every single one of those final rounds at zero. So it's not like you were like an eighth and 30 pounds back and had a good tournament. Like, you go out all that time, it had to feel good to close the deal.
It did. It felt really good. You know, I've said it a few times now. I've been very close a bunch of times, and, you know, with those top 10s that I've been able to get myself into, it always seems like I've had some kind of situation unfold during that day, whether it's I'm running out of fish, or, you know, I'm just hunting for a new area that I did not find that day, or, you know, we move bodies of water, something. It's always been something, you know, not that that's any kind of excuse or anything. It's just, you know, it just didn't work out until this past weekend, which, you know, thankfully it finally did.
Now, the entire tournament, it wasn't like a dominating performance by you where you were, you know, practicing 2 hours into the day. I mean, it was a grinder. At what point of the event where you have, you know, the opening rounds and then the knockout round and then the final, did you realize, man, this is kind of playing into my hands? I think that there might be something special going on this week.
You know, I heard you say a minute ago that weren't a fan of the weather that was for that event. And, you know, I was talking to Andy Morgan before it started, and I told him, I said, man, I sure hope it rains. There's a chance it could come up. I want the lake to come up a foot or two to be to my advantage. I felt like, you know, not necessarily my advantage, but just it would be fun fishing, mm-hmm. or should have been. We got the rain and then some tornadoes and all that too. It was wild, but it came up 4 foot. It came up so fast and got so dirty that it really wasn't good until literally the last day, pretty much, or towards the end of the week. So I'm glad it rained. I'm glad it came up a couple feet. And I feel like that last day call to stay close and fish around Eufaula Cove, which we were able to do, you know, definitely helped my end goal out.
Now, you barely edged out the big show just to make it into the knockout round, which I mean, that had to be crazy because you had to, at that point, know what was happening. And the key then had to figure out how to get there so you could capitalize on what was happening. But you were like 5 ounces from watching this thing on the sidelines going, dang, if I was out there, it would be a slugfest.
Yeah. Yeah. I got lucky. I slipped in. I caught I think it was a 310 or so and got myself, you know, a little bit of a margin there and got in. But, man, it was stressful leading up to it. I think I was like 9th or 10th for both cut for both of the cuts. God, just sure didn't make it easy on myself to get to the final day by any means.
Did anything that happened in practice kind of play out, or was this where every guy, regardless of what group you're in, went out and had to re-find fish on the first morning of the tournament?
I don't necessarily think guys had to refine fish. I chose to practice. I put in at Oak Ridge the first day and ran down south and fished dirty water. And at the time I was thinking, you know, this is going to be a waste of time. We've got this rain and everything. It's going to get dirty. I'm really just burning a day of practice doing stuff that I know is going to get blown out. And I just couldn't help myself. I had to go fish some stuff that, you know, a lot of people probably wouldn't fish, or, you know, they'd look at the dirty water and be like, no, this is nasty. I'm not going to fish it. But the water had been stable up to that pretty much. I knew if I got around them, they should bite. And I got a few bites. I caught some fish in places that I'd never fished before, which is good to know.
Really?
For the future. Which, you know, I kind of got excited about it, but later in the week it got nasty, like bad in there. So I didn't end up going in there, but the guys that went down in Pourham and Longtown, I'm sure they got a good amount of bites that first day of practice when it was still clean and stable. But, you know, when the water came up like it did, I'm sure, I fished through there day two and day three of practice, and I didn't have a whole lot of bites, but I did get a few. And obviously that's where the majority of it went down, where the water stayed the cleanest. And, you know, everything works a little quicker when the water's clean versus when it's chocolate.
Describe for those people who have never been in the dirty water at Lake Eufaula what dirty water on Eufaula is like, and then what it's like when the dirty water actually gets dirty.
Yeah, so the dirty water on Eufaula is pretty, it's about, you know, as dirty as you want to fish in when it's normal. And then when it gets dirty, it's like, you know, blood red. It's nasty. God, it's gross. And it's funny, there's a creek that I caught fish in, little small creek. It was on the South Canadian arm, and I whipped in there, caught 2 4-pounders on a buzz bait. And I thought, man, this is fun. Like I could run this stuff and get a few bites and do all right, probably. And I never saw a boat anywhere remotely close to where I was, which was good. It was a good feeling, but I ran back to it the third day of practice after we got the rain in the afternoon, just to check. And as I was getting closer and closer to it, water was getting more and more red, getting nastier. And I went under the bridge, and when I shut down the idle under the bridge, water was just boiling under it, and it was just the nastiest red dirt water coming in that you could imagine. Plus, I looked out in front of me. It took me a minute to realize what I was looking at, but it was bank to bank across there of a log jam that was floating down towards me.
So that spot was toast.
I was like, dude, I can't even get to where I want to go right now because I can't get through all the logs. So it was history after that. But, you know, when we get a little bit of rain, that place has so much inflow from, you know, from all the way up north to stuff down south. It changes rapidly.
I mean, there's a reason why they call it red dirt country. This neck of the woods, I mean, that red dirt just like rolls into the lake, and then there's no grass to filter it, and it literally turns it blood red. Now let me ask you this, and I'm curious, have you ever caught them out of that stuff that turns blood like that nasty red color? Have you ever caught fish when it turns that color? And then what do you think they do? Do those fish literally swim away from that stuff to cleaner water, or do they just hunker down in it?
I don't think they leave it. I mean, those fish especially, they're used to it. It's done that since the time Eufaula was built, I'm sure. I don't think they leave. I think they just kind of lock down, and they tend to not bite for a day or two. You know, 48 hours or so, maybe a little longer, really until it's stable. I feel like it takes that long after it stabilizes for them to bite. Now, they'll bite in the dirty water. I've caught them in that red stuff before.
Really?
It can't be like fresh, like the day it happens or within a day or so after. It's got to be like, you know, 3 or 4 days after, and it's been stable, and then they'll go to biting a little better and better every day after that.
Let's get to this last bite. I have it pulled up. Let me see if I can do this. I don't think I have, I don't have audio on it. You're a pretty low key guy. You're just like, oh yeah, that's the big girl. But let's get to that. There you go. Let's watch play. Now watch this. We're about to go to it. Boom. Just crack your guy with the camera. Gave it a double fist pump. I thought that was funny. Boat flip. Game over. Like, you've caught a lot of big fish in your time, Zach. Like, you're a collegiate national champion on the Arkansas River. You've weighed in a 29-pound bag on Grand. You've won a Toyota on Grand. You've won a Toyota Championship on Wheeler with some key. That was the Log Jam Derby, right?
Yeah.
And you've caught some key fish. That fish right there, I know there might be recency bias here. Will that go down right now as the best bite you've ever gotten in tournament competition?
Oh, there's no doubt, man. It was on a frog. That alone makes it that much sweeter. But to get that bite and it be a big one, the biggest fish I caught in the tournament, last like 45 minutes, when things were, you know, I was getting a little nervous. I think it got down to like a 10-pound deficit there. And, you know, that's nothing when these guys are you know, right behind you. And, you know, a couple bites, you could be over with like that. And when this fish bit out of that tree and I got her over the side of the boat, I felt a huge sigh of relief, you know, once I got her in there and got her on the scales.
What made you throw a frog into that? I think me, myself included, we'd be flipping a 6-inch brush hog. Like, what was it that made you pick up a frog and say, let's start going with this?
Well, I had flipped throughout the week on and off in the cleaner water, all around, you know, the bottom end of the lake, even up there where I was that last day. I'd flipped a bunch, and I really wasn't getting bit flipping. Tried a bunch of different colors, a bunch of different baits, couldn't get them to bite it. But every time I picked up like a bladed jig or something that I could just move around and make a bunch of casts, or a frog, I'd get a bite. And the frog really came into play that last day. I didn't throw it leading up to that often. I threw it some, but I didn't get many bites. But the last day, I think it just generally, they started biting better as a whole. And those fish in there especially, they hadn't bit real good all week, hardly at all, actually. And that last day, they started biting good, and I was just, man, I was feeling that black frog, and I kept it in my hand a little while, and it seemed like every time I pick it up and hold on to it for a little bit, I'd get a bite. So I got a lot of confidence really quick with it.
All right, can we focus? So BTLs, entertain, educate, and engage. Can we do a little bit of education here? Now, I know you don't want to give up all your secrets. This is straight up Oklahoma stuff, but I have a frozen screen right here. I'm going to add it to it. So when we say flipping bushes in Oklahoma, or the it's up in the willows, those are the two main things. Am I right? Flipping bushes and up in the willows when it's this time of the year. Now, you have bushes and willows here, but if you're not from this neck of the woods, and I'm not originally from this neck of the woods, I remember the first time I saw them flooded and I was like, what do you mean go flip willow? There's a billion of them. How do you learn how to break down this that is on the screen, which is acres and acres of flooded bushes, willows, and greenery with muddy water on a fishery where literally it's endless?
So from my experience on Eufaula and a lot of places around here, and it's not so much everywhere, but Eufaula especially, when you're looking at that screen right there, there is tons of objects in the water. There's branches that extend out. There's, you know, green here and there that's in the water. But if you can ever get your bait to the heart of whatever object you're throwing at, whether it's a willow like that or some buck brush, where that center part of the brush goes down to the bottom, 9 times out of 10 on Eufaula, that's where I get bit at. So with where that fish bit was, there was like, you know, I don't know, a conglomeration of willows that came together right there. In that dark spot. And I put my bait just right against it, and like two twitches coming off of it, she ate it. So, you know, and that's what I'd seen leading up to that bite there too, is every time I got it near the heart of a bush or a willow, root like that, base of a tree is where I would get my bites at. It's been that way for years when I go to Eufaula, it seems like, whether I'm on the bottom end where it's kind of, you know, there's the islands and stuff that have a bunch of willows, or if you go into the Dutchess area, there's a lot of brush. When I actually catch them flipping, I'm legit like heavy braid, and I flip into the tree kind of over and just try to land it right next to that base. And that's where I get bit at most of the time. If I can't skip it under there, of course, that's what I try to do first. But they really like to be right next to that main stalk of the tree for some reason. And that also, when you think about it, that'll eliminate a lot of wasted cast and stuff like that too. And by no means is that the way it always is, but the majority of the time that's been the best for me to get bites.
So we saw a lot of guys throwing bladed jigs. Wheeler was doing it, I think Rojas, Takahiro, around this stuff as well, which is a moving bait bite. When this first came up, was there a shad spawn around this stuff? And were these fish, do you think, like, this is just watching it, like patrolling the stuff that just came up before they kind of find their nook where they're like, okay, I'm going to bury up in this and sit right at the base of that. Is that why that moving bait bite was so effective the first opening rounds when that water was fresh into the bushes and willows?
I definitely think it was a part of it. You know, with it being fresh, just getting up to where it got, I think it was like 589 or 588 something. When it got there, I think a lot of those fish, it took them a couple of days to really get up and get in that stuff and get around it. That's why it's kind of slower during the, you know, earlier part in the week. Mm-hmm. But when it's fresh like that, I feel like they're kind of swimming around, hunting some stuff and kind of picking where they want to be. And the combination of that plus the shad spawn that was not full-fledged going on, but there was a good bit of it. I think those two things really helped that bladed jig bite. And
it's a good looking stretch, but totally different from what you were fishing, which was like that heavy isolated. This is he's throwing a bladed jig here. This is kind of more sparse, kind of bushes in and out.
Right. Yeah. And where I started the last day, it was kind of just a grassy bank, kind of looked like someone had mowed it, you know, like the town had mowed that stretch. And it just flooded the grass, and there was small isolated, like little bitty willow bushes and stuff that were in there, and just some odd man stuff that I could just swim a bladed jig by and get bit, or I could pick up my frog and land it right on top of it, you know, and get bit. So there was a lot of different scenarios that went on, but the shad responded pretty good in there the last day. And I think that had a lot to do with, why I got a lot of my bites in there.
Top three flooded bush and willow flippers in Oklahoma.
Christy, definitely. That's probably number one. He's made a that obvious.
Is Biffle still in that mix? Like at Gibson? Like I wouldn't want any part of him when Gibson comes up.
Yeah, I was going to say Biffle.
But then he started dragging the bug for the last 8 years and doesn't really care what the water's doing.
I know. He throws a bug.
Chris Jones?
Higher 20-foot low. Chris Jones, definitely. That'd be three good ones right there. If you take the bug away from Biffle and then definitely Chris Jones. I mean, he's a muddy water river rat guy. And I know that's one of his favorite things to do.
When... like, let's say the water's up and in the bushes, what is the ideal time? How long has it been up? How high do you want it up on it? How stable? Like, if you were to just have the perfect willow and bush flipping day, what are the ingredients, regardless of whether you're on Gibson, Keystone, Grand, Eufaula, Texoma, any of those?
And to me, it doesn't matter if it's To me, it doesn't. The water clarity really doesn't matter to me on what I'm flipping. I don't really pay it too much attention, but I don't want it to be that fresh red, like the real nasty stuff. I'll take some color. Honestly, I kind of prefer to have a little color, but I would say, you know, the third day after it's came up seems to be kind of the turning point. And really, you know, the water just has to stabilize. And from the time the water stabilizes, if you go 48 hours past that, I think you're good. You're going to start seeing an increase in bites, and, you know, you're going to start, you know, doing a little better. I know towards the end of practice, I was getting frustrated. I was like, man, this is tough. It shouldn't be this tough. And I kept telling myself, I know they'll get here. I've caught too many fish in these places. I know what lives in this lake. They're going to bite at some point. It's just a matter of when. And it was literally, you know, there towards knockout round the last day when they, you know, finally started biting good or better for me.
Are you fishing the Toyota series?
I'm not.
Are they going to absolutely have like the best time of their lives up in the bushes and willows?
And they should have a really good time, especially if the water stays like 588 right in there. I think like
they're dropping it a little bit, but I mean, as much rain as we've had in this area, who knows? But that's, I mean, in my opinion, and I'm not fishing it, that to me would be like a 3-rod tournament.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's probably going to be the most fun these guys will have this year fishing. As far as getting bites, if the water will stay above normal and not do anything drastic before it starts.
I know you have a 9 o'clock appointment. I want to talk a little bit. I mentioned some of your accomplishments. You're one of the few guys that has basically won at every single level of competition now. Like I said, starting with the Arkansas River, with the, I got to say it, the Oklahoma State Cowboys. And
it hurt
just a little bit. And then your softball team just went ham on OU and jumped ahead of them this past week. I didn't know if you noticed that, but I'm a big OU softball fan as well. So that's actually like the first time in like 19 years, I think, that you guys have won a series. But I digress. Like I said, the BFL, the Toyota Series, a Toyota Series championship, and now a BPT. You fished all the heavy hitters, basically almost all of the Red Crests. What's next on your to-do list when it comes to fishing? I mean, dude, you had a guy that was trying to chase you down in Drew Gill that's been fishing for like 4 years. Like, you're a veteran now, man. You've been around for a while. Like, what's next on the to-do list? What does the career goal list look like?
Oh, you know, it took me like 10 years to finally win one. I've been close a ton of times, but it took a long time to win, and I'm sure it's going to take just as long, but I would like to have an AOI at some point. Obviously, I started with a rookie of the year, which you only get one shot at. I was fortunate enough to lock that down, but, you know, I'd love to have an AOI at some point. I don't know when it's going to happen or if it will, but I certainly would like to have that to add. And, you know, I'd just like to win a few more. I told somebody yesterday that I've won a BFL, you know, I've won some Toyotas and other things, college deal, but nothing felt as good as that win did. It hit different, on Sunday than anything else. And I really want to get a second one now. So, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm ready to go fishing again.
That's fantastic. I'm going to let you go. I greatly appreciate the time for jumping on just after the week, and congratulations on getting that trophy and adding it to the rest of your trophies.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right. See ya.
See you, man.
All right. That is Zach Burge. Let me pull up the top 10 for this event. And we talked a little bit about it before. I talked a little bit about it with Zach before we went live, but Zach Burge, Drew Gill, Skeet Reese, Randy Howell, Nick LeBrun, Cole Floyd, Jeff Sprague, Luke Clausen, Martin Villa, and Britt Myers. And that is, in my opinion, probably one of the coolest top 10s, either on the BPT or the Bassmaster Elite Series, that we have seen in recent memory. You have a local favorite, a 20-something phenom, an AOI Bassmaster Classic champs back to back in Skeet Reese and Randy Howe, All American champ in Nick LeBrun, another classic champ in Luke Clausen, a young gun in Cole Floyd, and then an Elite Series champion making an appearance in the top 10 in Britt Myers, and then seeing how they caught their fish. You had, like I said, bladed jigs, flooded buck brush. You also had some live scoping mixed in there. You had flipping, you had frogging, just a really cool event that went down this past week on Lake Eufaula in Oklahoma. Now, listen, I'm probably just a little biased in this because I am from Oklahoma and I do like to fish Eufaula, and it is, you know, you kind of get twitchy when you see that water coming up. But we'll talk more about the this tournament. We'll dive into some streaks that were broken, some records that are still intact, and then we'll also look at the Bassmaster Open EQ on Logan Martin and look ahead to the rest of the week on BTL. So it's BTL on a Wednesday, May 8th already. We'll be back right after this.
The new Puma STS has been redesigned from the ground up. With the angler, design, function, and performance in mind, nothing on this new offering was compromised, and the only thing carried over from the previous version is the name. Based on the Soft Touch Series hull that started with the flagship Jaguar, this new model is nimble and performs incredibly well at all speeds with either a 250 or 300 horsepower engine. Featuring a new 96-inch wide body footprint, this hull measures out at 20 foot 7 inches in length. Industry-leading design coupled with tournament-winning performance. The Puma STS from Basscat. Feel the rush.
Gamakatsu, the innovation leader in fish hooks, is launching Nano Alpha technology in 2024. Nano Alpha is a new finish available on Gamakatsu's most popular hook styles. It delivers 2 times slicker performance, 4 times better corrosion resistance. Nano Alpha technology makes the world's greatest fish hooks even better in 2024 to help anglers catch more fish.
Born in Japan, using technology, innovation, and precision, Sunline produces the widest selection of fishing lines at the most technologically advanced line factory in the world. Manufactured at the strictest tolerances to produce victories at the highest levels of tournament bass fishing. From household names like Christie, Swindle, and Cruz, to young guns like Cook, Logan, New, and Welcher, they all trust Sunline to take them to the top of the leaderboard. Choose the line that will give you the strength to guarantee your confidence. Sunline.
Everything you need, one legendary buddy. Strike King.
It's definitely like quarter day.
Man, I really need to make this cut. I need to make up points quick.
Positive mental attitude.
I hope they stay where I found them.
Are they even pulling water?
Too far. I hope nobody else.
Man, it's too windy.
The water's too high.
AVCO, keeping you comfortable on the outside, no matter how you're feeling on the inside.
In 2023, we became a household name in the crappie fishing world thanks to Power Breaks, the game changer. Hey, bass fishing world, buckle up, because you're next. It's going to be fun. Welcome to the next evolution of our product line, Power Breaks Sidekick, designed to install right on your shallow water anchors. We are the first and only fishing break company to offer a breakaway system. Just like with the Game Changer, the Power Break Sidekick has it as well. And it's not a matter of if you're going to need it, it's when.
Power Breaks, the most durable fishing breaks available on the market today. Made right here in the USA with our rock-solid 2-year warranty.
Hey, not all fishing breaks are built equally, and you owe it to yourself to find out why ours are different.
Power Brake Sidekick. Order yours today at mypowerbrakes.com. You'll be glad you did.
All right, we are at the midway point. Basically, both the Bass Pro Tour and the Elite Series season. There's some interesting stuff that's going on. I talked about, I think it was like the announcer's curse is what they call it, like where they're like, oh, he hasn't given up a home run in 900 at bat. Boom, home run. Always like right when they're saying that. The streak of eight consecutive top tens for Jacob Wheeler ended. He ended up having, I think, like a 17th place finish. So, woo. But no Jacob Wheeler in the top 10 for the first time in like over a year on the BPT. He does, however, maintain his lead in the Angler of the Year standings, looking for his third AOY, three in the last 4 years after Matt Becker edged him out last year. But an interesting top 10 over in the Angler of the Year standings on the BPT with Jacob Wheeler, Alton Jones Jr., Dustin Connell, Cole Floyd, Drew Gill, Jesse Wiggins, Nick LeBrun, Jeff Sprague, Zach Burge jumped up into ninth, and then Justin Lucas rounding out the top 10. Now, one of the interesting things that you have to remember this year is that there are quite a few guys near the bottom of that field based on their average and based on them cutting it from 80 to 65 anglers, I believe is what they've settled on for the 2025 season, that have to catch them in the second half of the BPT season if they want to remain on the BPT. I do not have the list of actually how the averages go, so I'm not going to like name any of the guys, but you can look down there and kind of tell, because now they have everything updated based on where they finished every single year on the Bass Pro Tour, that they got to jump on it. They got to catch some fish or else they will no longer be on the BPT. We are also headed into the midway point of the Bassmaster Elite Series season, Lake Murray this week. And if you talk about the lakes that are kicking out and producing really quality fish in that Carolinas area, I've done entire shows on how I believe that North and South Carolina area is some of the best teaching and proving grounds for professional anglers. And you can name 15 guys with a long list of accomplishments that have come out of the Carolinas. So Lake Murray will be interesting. Water is up in the bushes, late spawn, herring spawn going on, post-spawn fish, offshore fish, all sorts of things in play in a field that has a number of anglers. The Brian News, the Patrick Walters, the Brandon Cobbs, the Shane LaHughes that have a ton of experience on that lake. But if you look at the Angler of the Year over on the Elite Series, it's also an interesting look into the top 10 with a lot of fresh faces. You have Trey McKinney, Jordan Lee, Chris Johnston, Tyler Williams, Corey Johnston, Stetson Blaylock, Jacob Fouts, which hasn't been talked about a lot, but coming off of a very interesting offseason for Jacob Fouts, where he basically went viral on YouTube for talking about the lack of sponsor support that he had. He had some sponsors drop him. He picked up some sponsors. He has gone out and he's just not a flashy, loud guy. So I have no problem saying quietly, but Jacob Fouts has quietly gone out and had a very solid first four Elite Series tournaments, 28th at Toledo Bend, 27th at Lake Fork, 38th at the Harris Chain, and third at the St. John's River. And for a guy who has been very open about how he is spending a lot of his own money on the Elite Series and is relying on winnings along with guiding to make a living in this game, four tournaments in, he's cashed $60,000 in checks. So really cool to see Jacob Fouts doing well. Justin Hamner in eighth. No classic hangover for Justin Hamner. Of course, he had a really good first two tournaments before the Bassmaster Classic. He went 14 and third in Louisiana and Texas. And then he obviously won the Bassmaster Classic. But following that, he went to Florida, which has not been Justin Hamner's strong suit, and went 26th, 55, and 55th. So there is a chance with Justin Hamner in eighth that he could win the Bassmaster Classic and the Angler of the Year in the same season. Cody Huff, in my opinion, has been an underachieving Elite Series angler over his time on the Elite Series. The guy is uber talented, has won a lot of tournaments around the Ozarks. He, I think, is really coming into form in ninth. And then Kyle Norsetter, which I don't know much about Kyle Norsetter. He rounds out the top 10. But Trey McKinney, 380 points, and the top 10 are all separated by 78 points. The scary thing is, the Northern Swing is fixing to commence, so to speak. And you have a Chris Johnston and a Corey Johnston in third and fifth. And then you can go down to 13th, which is a Coop Gallant in 13th. But I think we could be setting up to see a Chris and Corey Johnston Angler of the Year showdown going into the last couple tournaments of the year, depending on how things go these next couple of events. If you guys want more BTL, more coverage, more information on the Elite Series that's about to kick off on Lake Murray, Andrew Upshaw just posted yesterday his Open Pros Pick'em. It got a little heated there. I brought up that there is a cicada hatch, a 17-year cicada hatch going on around a lot of the country, but also in South Carolina on Lake Murray. I think it might enhance the frog and the popper bite. Todd Castledine was of a different opinion, so head over to Andrew Upshaw's channel to watch more about that. I also jumped on Luke Duncan's show a couple nights ago, a little bit more unfiltered there, gave my opinion about some of the things, the rumors that are coming out, changes for 2025 from the Bassmaster Tech Committee. And then I also was on the Serious Angler podcast last night with Bailey, along with Adam Bartuzek, who is my team partner for that Dick Hiley St. Jude Bass Classic. Yes, I saw Nick said he sent you a nice pick in my email of the cicadas. I have gotten a lot of feedback from the cicadas. I remember when I was, God, I had to be 10, 11, whenever the last big cicada hatch went through Illinois when I was a kid, and we had a tan canoe. That was all we had that we fished out of. And I would collect the jar of cicadas, poke holes in the top of the mason jar, and launch a canoe on Clinton Lake. And all of the big golden carp were up slurping the cicadas off the surface. And I just take a little number 8 gold Aberdeen hook, an 8-pound test or 7-pound, 6-pound test, probably Stren, blue Stren back in the day is what we put on the old spinning rods. And my dad paddled around and I would just kind of flick the cicada out around a weightless on a hook around where I would see the carp. And then it just would tow the canoe around. I still remember it was some of the most fun you could have. Just catch a giant carp. We catch bass, crappie, everything eats those cicadas. So kind of a natural phenomenon that's going around. Another thing that is a natural phenomenon is the one and only Frank Scalish. Frank and I are live tomorrow, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, back in studio with another day 4. And then next week, I'm back on the road. I got to leave Thursday after Frank. I'm headed to Lake Hartwell in South Carolina. There's an Outdoor Brands team media event, another 18-hour drive. We'll be live from the OBT media event. Some big Elite Series and BPT names that are going to be there. So stay tuned. I got to update the website. It's been a little bit of a chaotic week and a half here. So stay tuned to that for the schedule for next week. But that's all we got for today. Big shout out to Zach Burge for taking time out of his morning to jump on. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to everybody else who got a victory over the last couple weeks. And we'll talk to everybody tomorrow. That's all we got. See ya.